Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, the next couple weekends for me are going to be kind of busy, so we've got two weekends of double features for you, and I don't think you're going to get bored. So first, here is a little reading excerpted from an online article titled Through Their Eyes, The Ariel School Encounter. And the article was written by Ellen Mahoney, published June 28, 2018. Although the Ruwa encounter happened on a Friday, the days preceding the event had been highly unusual, according to the late UFO investigator Cynthia Hind, who was based in Harare at the time. Hind described her investigation of the Ariel School sighting in her 1996 book, UFOs Over Africa. In the book, Hind wrote that a few days before the encounter, hundreds of Zimbabweans had reported seeing bright flashing lights in the sky in what was thought to be a spectacular meteor shower. Additionally, odd explosions were heard near the country's Lake Kariba area. A mother and son veered while driving to miss a strange object in the road, and two pilots from Harare claimed they saw what looked like a fireball with a tail. So this is the background that leads up to a story Ken Lane includes in this Desert Oracle radio episode, which he recorded September 11th, 2020. It's called Message Deleted. And I'll give you a link at the bottom of the hour if you want to follow up on this story.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Our beloved desert and our long, hot summer of calamity. The world wants us dead. It has been fairly obvious for 20 plus years now, but the world has been compelled to take direct action. For so long here in America, we have been spared. For so long here in the American Southwest, we have been spared. Yes, the wildfires were bad for a couple of weeks per year in your particular part of the West, but then they were just something on the TV news at night during wildfire season. The heat waves were getting worse, but at least we could escape to the mountains for cooler weather, or escape to an air-conditioned movie theater on Labor Day. I have not paid much attention to the news lately, but just a cursory glance now and then shows crowds of terrified Bakersfield suburbanites standing in the reservoir water as walls of flame surround them, waiting for the National Guard to rescue them by helicopter. A dozen or so right to the hospital, some burned nearly to a crisp. Stay-at-home summer fun, people dying in their apartments during the monster heat waves and constant power outages. And now, with doors and windows tightly closed against the incredibly dangerous wildfire smoke in all of our cities. Oh, and we're real low on water, too, across the Southwest. We've got some more mitigating and lawyering to do as states and counties and water districts, but we all know the truth, and we all know it's coming soon. What will be the first city that puts people in jail for filling up their swimming pool? My guess is whatever city it will be, it will happen long before the golf course owners get so much as a fix-it ticket. The pandemic is killing us off, especially in America, because we don't have a reason to be alive. We just exist. Consumers. Our elders, our grandparents, what do we do with them when they've lived a long life? Well, unless they're multimillionaires and can afford to stay in their nice home with a full-time nurse, we ship them to assisted living facilities. For-profit companies that warehouse the elderly until they expire. Because the family has collapsed. The boomers encouraged it. They had as little interest in grandchildren, your children, as they had in sharing a family home with you when they were old. So unless they're one percenters, there's no choice. When they can't get around on their own anymore, we put them in the facility after we sell their house and pay off their boat. And then what's left goes to Dismal Mesa Assisted Living Facility, a division of Rite Aid Health Industries Group. We just exist. Waiting to be told what to do, what to buy, who to vote for, where to evacuate to, when to turn on the Zoom meeting. Kids included now, children included. It was a beautiful idea that women finally would have the ability to choose when they would spend 9 months carrying a baby and another 2 decades caring for it. But our system threw in something extra. You can't afford to have a baby even when you want to. The comfortable class can still do it. They can still burn up a whole mountain forest, what's left of it anyway, by lighting it aflame with a gender reveal explosive. But the rest of us, enjoy your couple of weeks off for parental leave if you're lucky enough to be one of the lucky ducks who has a full-time job in this country, where the rosiest unemployment numbers hover around 10% for a year straight. You know, a funny thing about the Great Depression is that the first year had 10% unemployment numbers. Wasn't until year 3 when 25% of Americans had lost their work. Children sit at home looking at a laptop computer for 6 hours a day if they've got a laptop. You know what they do for PE, physical education, as they say, on the Zoom meetings? Where I live, the local high school PE teacher puts up diagrams of exercises. After an hour of sitting in a chair looking at diagrams of exercises, the children are quizzed on the names of the exercises.
She was all black and It looked like he had long hair.
Could you see his face?
No,
just in a black. What was he wearing? Was he among the trees?
It was just about like a shadow. It just saw a shadow thing.
What is your name?
Trevor Bond.
And you also saw this?
Yes, we were all there.
Creature?
Yes.
What did you think it was?
I don't know, really.
I'm Daniel Mandy, and I saw this silver thing in amongst this clump of trees, with this one thing sitting on the side and another thing sort of like running up and down the top.
I saw something silver on the ground amongst the trees, and a person in black, and that's all I saw.
You saw a person alongside the silver thing?
Yes.
Something scared you, is that right?
Yes.
What scared you?
The noise.
What noise?
The noise that we heard in the air.
You heard a noise in the
yes.
air? What was it like? Like a roar or a buzz or a hum or what kind of a noise?
It was like someone was blowing a flute. It was scary myself.
It was scary because you saw something yourself?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I saw little objects hovering. It was quite big actually, and then there was little ones all around it. We saw something silver, and then we quickly ran to the logs, and we saw a silver thing, and we saw a man standing next to it.
What was it? What did it feel like when he was looking at you?
I felt scared.
It felt scary? What was scary about it?
Well, I felt scared because I've never seen such a person like that before.
Did you see the eyes? What did they look like?
They were going like that.
Where was the pointy part? Was the pointy part in here, or was the pointy part out there? Up there. And what was the feeling when you looked at the eyes?
It was scary.
Did you look at him?
Yes.
Did he look at you?
Yes, and he gave me the creeps, and I told him.
Gave you the creeps. Actually, in your drawing, you showed him standing up, didn't you?
Yes, I had to draw him standing up because I couldn't draw him sitting. What I thought was maybe the world's going to end. Maybe they're telling us the world's going to end.
Why do you think they might want us to be scared?
Because we don't look after the planet and the area properly.
Mm-hmm. And really, this is this an idea that you have had before, that we don't look after the planet properly in the air, or did this idea come to you when you had this experience?
When I had this experience,
my heart kind of went faster and then slower and then faster and then slower,
mm-hmm.
all at the same time.
What time of day did this event occur?
At break time.
Break time in the morning or lunch break?
Morning.
Morning break. And what were you doing at the time?
Well, I was playing in the playground, and then we saw something silver, and then we quickly ran to the logs, and we saw a silver thing, and we saw a man standing next to it.
They were just like looking at all of us. They seemed to have stiff necks. They didn't seem to move their necks like we can.
They weren't frightened of us. They actually came near.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't try to attack.
They didn't act in an unfriendly way.
No.
Then he was looking at me back. I couldn't just keep on looking at him, so I had to stop and I looked sideways. So he kept on making me feel faint.
I think they want people to know that we're actually making harm on this world.
Those voices are from the last decade of the past century, the recent past, the year 1994. A half dozen years after the international organizations on this planet, the United Nations among them, back when such organizations still had some clout, when the old order was still hanging on, these organizations came together to announce that catastrophic climate change would shortly follow unless we very quickly got a handle on carbon emissions into our atmosphere. The fossil fuel companies, Exxon and Mobil, and their protection rackets at the White House and in Congress, Saudi Arabia, the Soviet Union, etc., well, they took the news badly. I mean, they actually took the news and threw it away. They hid it as best they could. There were some incremental fixes here and there, like scrubbers on industrial smokestacks, slightly better gasoline efficiency in newer cars. But for the most part, the oil economy, the global oil economy that has controlled most of what has happened on Earth over the past 100 years or so, well, it just kept on trucking. And flying, and shipping, and otherwise burning fossil fuels for anything that needed heat or energy. And to make sure they did not lose any sliver of profits from increased fuel efficiency, they summoned a legion of demons from hell and put them in the bodies of willing frat boys and other douchebags in navy blue business suits. And they sent them out to push plastic everything on everybody. Glass bottles and jars had worked out pretty well, but every corporation selling consumer garbage quickly switched to plastics. Plastic bottles, plastic packaging, plastic cars, fake plastic trees. They turned a weekend party at the neighborhood pub into a week-long hen party or stag party in the newly opened tourist destinations of Prague and Budapest. All courtesy of cheap airfares from literally fly-by-night cheap airlines, propped up by oil money investments, hedge funds, vulture capitalists. They'd already bribed every American city into ripping up most of its public transit infrastructure. They'd kneecapped passenger train service. You know, they'd even organized some groups of thugs to fight carpool parking lots in the suburbs. In recent years, they've thrown hundreds of millions of evil money at every attempt to get rid of plastic grocery bags, plastic crap that litters our oceans and landfills and open spaces. 30 years ago, when there was half as much human-caused carbon dioxide in Earth's atmosphere, when we had three times the wildlife, three times the forest cover, three times the glaciers, we had a chance at a new world. An easy transition. A lot less people. Billions less people at the time. A lot less disruption, as they used to call it in Silicon Valley, before even the dummies figured out Silicon Valley is just the devil by another name. The devil you let inside your home. Back when most of us at least had a roof over our heads. The children at the Ariel School, names are always important, remember this, and life is less of a baffling mystery and more of an interesting puzzle. The children at the Ariel School, well, they were chosen of mixed race, different cultures, pure of mind and heart and spirit, between the ages of 6 and 12, living in relatively prosperous Zimbabwe. In a relative lull between imperialism and colonialism and its natural revenge. The children were at morning recess outside in the fresh air, the forest coming right up to the school grounds. Forest that has since been completely cleared, of course. These children, born to native tribes, born to colonizers and immigrants from Europe and Asia, in their neat school uniforms laughing on the playground? Well, they began to notice something happening. Some saw the flash of light, the first sign that your reality is shifting. Whether you're an old Welsh farmer or Betty and Barney Hill on a New England back road, or Muhammad meditating in the hills outside Mecca, or Joseph Smith in the sacred grove of Western New York State. A few of the children witnessed disc-shaped objects low in the sky, headed for the school, traveling down the power lines like maglev trains. Electricity. Some heard the music first, the haunting music, like someone was playing a flute. Pan on his pipes, and suddenly, just above a low bunch of bushes and young trees at the playground's edge, many of the children saw a wonder, a miracle. Hovering there was a vessel of some kind, a craft. Each child described it and later drew it in chalk and crayon, each a bit differently. Some only saw an indistinct silvery shape, others perceived a variety of details from antenna to portholes that appeared in the sides, flashing lights to racing stripes. But almost all of them, nearly all of the 62 children on that suddenly strange morning of September 16, 1994, saw the entities. No bigger than the oldest school children, variously described as being completely black with long black hair like the local goblins of Zimbabwean folklore, or wearing neat little jumpsuits like the good neighbors of Northern Europe. While the perceptions varied, one attribute remained constant: the haunting, knowing eyes. The eyes that looked into these children's very souls. John Mack, the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and Harvard Medical School psychiatrist and professor, traveled to the school in Rua, Zimbabwe to interview the children, who had already spoken to several television crews. The incident was widely reported because Zimbabwe saw many strange occurrences on those days and nights 27 years ago this month. Dr. Mack had gone down a strange path. Along with Carl Sagan, he was a leader and activist within the Physicians for Social Responsibility, which earned the Nobel Prize for its efforts to reduce and eliminate nuclear weapons. Along with Sagan and 700 other members, John Mack trespassed on the Nevada test site in the summer of 1986. Civil disobedience to call the world's attention to the horrors being committed in humanity's name on the Nevada desert. In the 1990s, the psychiatrist became entranced by the persistent tales of alien abduction that he heard from hundreds of people, mostly women, who had never sought attention for their troubling experiences, and in fact remained anonymous in Mack's published research. The physical, objective reality of spaceships hovering over suburban homes, while troops of little humanoids made repeat visits to these so-called abductees. Well, that was obviously impossible by any metrics we possess. But the experiences were real. Undoubtedly real. Lives were upturned and patterns had emerged. After these experiences, identical in all but the cultural window dressing to the tales of being taken away by the fair folk, the dwarves, the tales that fill our Bibles and our fables, the tales that fill Native American Indian religion and the Hindu religion and every ancient lore on Earth, the abductees saw the world in a different light. When Dr. Mack created a multiple-choice test for the people who came to him seeking understanding, one of the top indicators of this experience was a sudden, permanent change in their view of nature, of ecology, of the state of our home, of being a living organism within what James Lovelock and Lynn Margulis called Gaia, the Gaia hypothesis. The ancient Greeks just said Gaia, the Earth. Lynn Margulis, the pioneering evolutionary biologist, and as it happens, Carl Sagan's spouse and partner in science, especially in the 1980s and 1990s, the people who had this experience were blasted with a particular piece of information. Unless we rapidly changed our civilization, rapidly moved away from burning fossil fuels hauled up from beneath the earth, well, our world would come to a quick end, and we'd be here to experience it. We did not heed the call. Well, you know the moral of the story. We had better do so now. Not return to 1988 or 1994 when there was half as much carbon put into the atmosphere by humans, but simply to continue the human journey. Well, the planet will still be here, and being adaptable organisms ourselves, some of us will survive. We will burrow underground. The richest will escape to space stations and dreary colonies on Mars and the Moon. Some will be sacrificed to seek other planets, hoping their great-great-great-grandchildren will survive to be dropped onto a dead planet somewhere out there in hopes of terraforming the surface over 100 generations and making some cruel parody of basic life on Earth as it had been for 100,000 years before we wrecked it all in less than a century. Whether you're floating dead in a house nobody has gotten around to check in Lake Charles, or your charred bones await eventual discovery in the blackened forest of Oregon or Northern California or Angeles National Forest, whether you fled the apocalyptic wildfires in Greece or Bulgaria or Brazil, whether you're down with the coronavirus anywhere on this polluted planet, your lungs already ruined from breathing particulate matter, diesel smoke, industrial poisons, well, you are the proof. You're the proof of what has happened. And if you're still alive, if you're still able to get around, still willing to give it a shot, well, friends, it's time to shoot. Or get off the pot, as they say. From Amboy to Zyzik's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Music and most of this program from our own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Friday nights, 10 p.m., KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree, California. Listen to us on Lookout FM in Burbank and Los Angeles, too. We'll see you next week, hopefully. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM. And as promised, here's the link to give you more on that remarkable story of the kids at the Ariel School in 1994. So you go to www.jar-magazine.com/encounters/89-through-their-eyes-ariel-school-encounter. It's a great article. The second half of our program today is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio from September 3rd, 2021. Ken is giving us a message of encouragement, but you have to listen close to find it.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. You know, when you're reading a historical account and the writer says something like, because they did not know any better, the people believed this or that horrible disaster was a sign. And you think, well, of course it was a sign. The greater meaning may or may not elude you, but of course it means something when one third or one half or more of the population is wiped out in a few years. As with the Black Death of 1346 to 1353. The plague had been dormant in the Gobi Desert, probably, for centuries, the desert wilds of today's Mongolia. The northern parts look a lot like the Great Basin. So maybe the plague first traveled east on the Silk Road, which runs through the middle of the Gobi. Probably in the early 14th century, probably in the 1320s, something or someone kicked it up from the dry ground, and it hitched a slow overland ride to China, where about half the population of Kublai Khan's dynasty perished from that awful disease before anybody in Europe or the Mediterranean got the bad news. Maybe. It's hard to say what took the Mongolian Empire's population from about 130 million to about 60 million over those handful of years. As in Europe, a combination of climate disasters and famine, malnutrition, livestock disease, and it already weakened the populations. Maybe it really was a Mongolian army lobbing plague victim corpses by catapult into the port city of Kaffa on the Black Sea in today's Ukraine. Maybe that's what did it back in 1347. Either way, ships full of dead and infected sailors, along with rats and fleas that lived within every ship, arrived in Genoa, and by the next year, the Black Death was sweeping across Europe, the Middle East, North Africa, all the way to Iceland. Had the Greenland colonies survived, it may have torn through North and South America back then, too. The Vikings had quit Greenland by then due to the same bad conditions that were making life hard everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. The weather changed. Too cold in that case. And it was harder to grow food. Anyway, one thing we share with Western Europe of the 1300s is that astrology is everywhere, of great importance around the world. Reversed, though, from its position in the late Middle Ages. When the plague arrived in Western Europe, it was the astrologers of the great universities and religious institutions and medical schools who announced the likely reason for the Black Death, which they got from the more advanced Arab astronomers and astrologers, through which it passed to Jewish astrologers in Western Europe and then to the royal courts to explain the calamity. It was all because of the great conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in 13 and 45, and who knows, maybe the bubonic plague burst out of the parched soil on that very day. March 21, 1345, when Jupiter and Saturn met so heavy in the evening sky. The plague was raging somewhere by then. Maybe just in the fleas and the beast of burden on the pack trains on the old Silk Road. Back then, it was the common people who had trouble dealing with astrology, being a fairly exact science, even if the conclusions seem unscientific today. It was easier to blame God and the devil, the two forces always at work. It did not help that God and his especially corrupt religion of the 14th century punished nearly every human behavior as mortal sin. Work, sex, love, joy, ambition, success, failure, disease, commerce, music. From the way you wore your hair to whether you enjoyed a particular food or drink. Of course, people live their lives like always, because with an impossible religion that's based on everything human being evil, well, everybody winds up ignoring 99% of it. Even if they enjoy the religious festivals every couple of weeks all year round, which is how it used to be. Let's have those again, if we are going to still have religion. If you had done or even thought about doing anything in your life at any time, then there was a sin to match it. So that's why your children and spouse expired in a painful explosion of black boils in a few days' time, and then it came for you. The hooded figure at the door. Sometimes a plague doctor, sometimes a nun. And sometimes the grinning skull of the Grim Reaper. At least that harvest was doing fine. The longer we survive and the more information we collect as a species, the more we realize that everything's a sign. The Mongol Empire could not support 130 million people in the early 14th century. Now, one way to process that conclusion made by non-human forces of nature is to watch 70 million of those people die from famine and disease over the course of a decade or so. We have something called hantavirus in the Americas, carried by our cute little desert rodents and their droppings. There's no cure for either the pulmonary or the hemorrhaging and fever version, and since the 1990s, it has killed 36% of the infected in the United States. less than 1,000 cases during that time. But it's easy to see how something like that could very quickly get out of hand. The good news is that human-to-human transmission has been unknown in North America, at least modern North America. But in 2019, South America had human-to-human transmission. Something is always going to kill off some of us. Sometimes we do it ourselves, like right now. Like many species, we instinctively know when conditions are getting worse and we simply stop reproducing. The way coyotes and wolves have smaller litters when the food supply is bad. Or, in the coyote's case, larger replacement litters when the U.S. government's Wildlife Services Division murders an especially horrific number of coyotes and other wildlife in a single year, including endangered species. Your tax dollars at work. Thanks, USDA. Well, because I get the question a lot, I'll say I am optimistic about our species and the health of the world we live on as part of. Because in the long run, we're probably going to make it. Because as the humanoid equivalent of the coyote, we tend to not just survive, but to thrive. Sort of the root of our problem right now. It's a good problem to have, biologically speaking, in the long run. We are crafty as a species, and in various configurations, if rarely as individuals. And you know what? If it gets really bad, and we are the last ones to spend our lives ordering food from apartments and watching commercials on YouTube, well, maybe that's not the very worst thing that ever happened to humanity. It's not like this is the first extinction crisis. Or the first period of violent climate change we've been through over our several hundred thousand years of existence in this form. In this form, just in better shape. Holistically in better shape. Just vibing on the grasslands and the plains, taking mushrooms and talking to the gods who walked amongst us in those days, who possessed us, or impregnated us when requested or not. Like in a voodoo ritual today. Sure, billions of years from now, all of this will be gone. But who cares, right? There's a lot of meantime. There may truly be some grand point to all of this. Wouldn't that be fun? Or maybe this is the beginning of many generations of weird adventure, interesting times, like the birds. People always say go the way of the dinosaurs because until the late 1990s, it was believed by absolutely everyone except a few renegade paleontologists that dinosaurs had all gone extinct. Then, 25 years ago, newly discovered fossils in China showed that birds were the direct descendants of theropods. The dinosaurs who got away, all the crazy things birds came up with, like migrating back and forth across the world by flying, that's a pretty good innovation. Living their best lives. The birds made it. Be like the birds. This era has produced a lot of phrases like that. Living their best life. I'm living my best life. Phrases that are at inception, these cruel, demonic reversals of the meaning we seek in what remains of our actual lives. Only in our present day, the time of the worst vibes in modern memory, when the New York Times slaps a 5-item menu of mental health stories on the Sunday digital edition between the climate change disaster maps, the hurricane and wildfire maps, and the pandemic hotspot maps, only an era of widespread language failure would produce a phrase as poisonously banal as no bad vibes. The passive-aggressive Instagram lifestyle command that replaced the vapid but at least easygoing "it's all good." Nobody says "it's all good" now, not even as a joke. Nobody would dare. You cannot be gleefully unstable or bursting with rage over something on the internet or yelling about celebrities and horse paste or threatening to raid the elementary school and zip tie the teachers. In a world where "it's all good" is even an ironic possibility. There is basically nothing that qualifies as consensus good in the year of our annoyance, 20 and 21. Nothing. You can post, say, "birds are interesting" on a public computer network, or in your group chat. Or maybe say it to somebody in front of you in a friendly way in the checkout line, the self-checkout line, and you will not get away with it. People will be on your ass so fast you'll have wished you'd never been born. The nerve of you coming in here with that tired garbage. Wake up, idiot. Joke's on you, clown. Soundscapes tonight by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. So we're done with It's All Good. We're done with the very 2017 Living Your Best Life. And I'm pretty sure they threw away the No Bad Vibes pillows around the pool at the Ace Hotel as part of coronavirus deep cleaning protocols that in no way prevent coronavirus. That's another one we put to rest. Wash your hands. Remember when all the hall monitors on Twitter put wash your hands into their bios on Twitter? Oh, do you not look at Twitter because you are living your best life? Well, good for you. I don't like it myself. A few minutes now and then to see what's going on, see if the wildfire smoke or the angry mob is headed my way, that's enough. I wonder what kind of disaster will upset the big 911 celebration next weekend. There was a New York is Back concert in Central Park a couple weeks ago when a previous hurricane hit Manhattan. And you know what? Barry Manilow had to run for his life. It was terrible. But he was just a few lines into one of his feel-good hits from 50 years ago. They got him in the ambulance. Now, Bette Midler washed out to Roosevelt Island, and Billy Joel had to be rescued from the bottom of a wine cellar. It was terrible. I got some mail here. I know sometimes it just feels good to tell somebody, get it off your chest, off your mind. But I can't read any of these, I'm sorry. And it's a big pile. It's been piling up all summer. I keep moving the difficult ones to another side of my desk. There are some good postcards here. I'm going to read some postcards next time. The letters are just pretty depressing. I don't have any answers. I'm sorry. I can't give you permission to follow your dreams or quit school or abandon your abusive roommate or whatever you're thinking about doing. Live your best life. No bad vibes, etc. Sometimes it just feels good to tell somebody, get it off your chest, off your mind, confess to somebody, I get it. But I'm not joining Therapy Nation Incorporated as a provider or as a customer. You know the kind of mail I like to see? I like to see the kind of postcard I get now and then from friends old and new who are saving the world in various and necessary ways. Like when my pal Zinko Jordan sends me a card from the monastery where he lives and works, saying to drop by sometime and hang out in the mountains. I like to hear that. I like hearing from people such as Jason Katz in Florida, who started the Islandia Journal, a sort of Florida version of Desert Oracle. Or Annie up at Zizek's. And now I know her name is actually Anne Initial E. And she says, come on by the Desert Education Center and take a look at old Dr. Curtis Springer's radio broadcast booth. That's when the mail feels like Christmas morning. We tend to think of ourselves, both individually and as a species, as being in a very fixed position, but it's just a moment. And we don't know where all this goes. We know our nature. We know what feels best. Our nature is to explore, to find new opportunity, make our own utopia, or at least give it an honest shot. To Zizek's and across the great Mojave wilderness. This has been Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast from our little outpost in the desert to radio stations near and far, to Alaska, to Vermont, to Hawaii. I think we're on in Hawaii. We're on in Los Angeles on a station called Lookout FM, a freeform, very strange and interesting broadcast station. You can get on a couple frequencies. Look at lookoutfm.com. Have you been to the Pygmalion Festival in Urbana, Illinois? Well, if you're anywhere at all nearby, come this year, they're having it. Safe and sane, you gotta be fully vaccinated 14 days prior. Coming up quick, the weekend of September 21 through 23. Desert Oracle will be live on stage Friday night, the 24th, on the 25 o'clock Brewing Company stage. At 8 p.m. Learn all about it at thisispygmalion.com. We also got a special show in Chicago on Sunday, September 26th at Illuminated Brew Works. They got a new tap room, the Illuminated Brew Works Lodge Number 1. We'll put all that out on the social media stuff, I believe. Well, maybe it's there right now. I don't know. I'm in the radio studio. I don't know what's happening out there. I'm just glad the power hasn't gone out this time. Happy September, I hope. Autumn is officially here. By one metric, and it's coming soon by another. Thank you for listening, friends. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Well, my thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio and to the good folks at KGBM who support and make space for this show. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Until then, stay well and sweet dreams. And again, we're going to have our local birds take us out. And I hope you're enjoying the sounds of the broad-tailed hummingbird that showed up at my house this week. No, that was not a UFO sound.